National Radio Club.
Howdy, Xers. Welcome to Market Scope for March 2012. This month, we're dusting off an old air check from almost 23 years ago. From May 16th, 1989, here's a bit of afternoon drive from Detroit's Z95.5.
All right, here comes the afternoon drive home challenge. How many times can you doo-wop, diddy-diddy-dum, diddy-doo, or shoo-bop-shoo-bop during this thing? I love this. Another hour now of the best variety of music, the Fine Young Cannibals. It's got a good thing on Z95.5. To the whistle blow, it's 5 o'clock quitting time, and when you hear Dick Furton in the morning and the best variety all day long, you're hearing WCZY-FM Detroit, 5 o'clock. I'm Michael Wade.
All hits,
Z95.5, better variety of music on the road home at 5:11. I am Michael Wade. If you're thinking of making your party plans for Thursday night and you happen to be downriver, just kind of cruising on by, why don't you stop by Shots on the Water on Biddle Avenue in Wyandotte. Yours truly, Michael Wade, hosting the festivities Thursday night around 9 p.m. Hope to see you there from Z95.5.
This is Dick Burton. Tomorrow morning, we'll be giving you another chance to win with the Z95.5 lottery. We'll play the original tabloid trivia game and have Mayor Young try to answer the question, how many paternity tests does it take to screw up a bachelor? See you tomorrow morning right here on Z95.5.
After all, best variety, more music, Z95.5. Peter Cetera and Cher and Michael Wade back in the afternoon at 5:19. Your Tuesday commute out there not looking, I guess, too badly out there now. Trying to keep commuters strong and glad and keeping America free. Here he is. What a responsibility you have, Glenn Oswald, in the AAA safety copter.
Now, why do you just heave on me? Wow.
What's up?
Not much. Yeah, like you said, looking real good out here. Your idol, Vice President Quayle, has arrived in Novi, and he'll be motoring down toward Dearborn, I guess, in the next half hour or so. So we'll keep you updated with that. But for right now, he is in Novi, making a speech. Southbound Lodge on the service drive, an 8 mile stalled car in the left center lane. Westbound Ford Road, west of Greenfield, a stalled car in the left lane there. A stalled Greyhound bus downtown, southbound 375 on the service drive between London and Lafayette. That is blocking the center lane. Eastbound 8 mile west of Grand River, stalled car in the right lane. And over on westbound 8 mile east of Inkster, a stalled 18 wheeler blocking the right lane there. From the AAA safety copter, I'm Glenn Oswald, Z95.5.
I wonder if there's any truth to the rumor that Quayle keeps a cheat sheet for his speech in his underwear.
That could be. We'll
possibly. I don't know if you see that from there, but we'll check back with you in a while. All right, 5:20, we're about to announce another Z95.5 winning lottery number. Hang on, that puppy's next.
Now, here's another Z95.5 winning lottery number.
This one is worth $1,095 cash to you if your Z95.5 lottery number happens to be 8238565. All right, if that's your number, you've got 15 minutes to call the Z Lottery line at 298-695.5. Again, that winning number for $1,095 is 8238565. And good luck to you. Hope that's your Z95.5 winning lottery number, and you call me now. It's a better variety with more music only on Z95.5.
Tomorrow morning at 720, Dick Burton starts your day with a brand new number in the Z95.5 lottery. Have you got your number yet? If not, do it today by sending a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Lottery, Z95.5, Detroit, 48237. The Z Lottery, with winner after winner, wants to put your name on the list. And your next chance to cash in happens again tomorrow morning at 7:20 with Dick Burton, all here, all on Z.
With a better variety of more music.
Z95.5.
Here's the Z95.5 Motor City weather. Sunny skies the remainder of this afternoon. Fair tonight, 48 below. Sunny, warmer tomorrow. And a high around 78. It's mostly sunny now and 71 degrees at Z95.5. Z95.5 with a better variety of music and, of course, more winners than ever before. Congratulations to Tim Strader of Romulus and Doug Dottie of Dearborn, our latest winners in the Z95.5 lottery. You very well could be next tomorrow morning. Dick Burton, you heard him, right, has a winning lottery number worth $5,000 at 7:20 tomorrow.
When love makes a sound, a heart needs a secretary.
Z95.5, best variety, more music. I'm Michael Wade, back out in the afternoon at 5:49. Another check on the traffic situation out there. And, of course, the Vice Presidential Motorcade is out and about going, I think, from Novi now to where, Glenn?
To Dearborn, that's correct,
to
Michael.
Dearborn. I think they're going to stop on the way, by the way, at the White Castle, because I don't think they can get sliders in D.C. On traffic, here's Glenn Oswald.
Yeah. That's right. He is heading southbound along 275. It will be in a couple of moments anyway. So motorists will find temporarily the ramps from all the roads between I-96 and M-14. Those ramps to southbound 275 are temporarily closed by police for the Vice Presidential Motorcade. Other than that, winding it down with a few problems. Eastbound 696 east of Gratiot, an accident on the shoulder slowing traffic. Westbound 8 Mile east of the Southfield, stalled car in the left lane. And still have the stalled 18-wheeler along westbound 8 Mile east of Inkster in the right lane. That is all. Back tomorrow morning with Dick Burton at 7 o'clock. From the AAA Safety Copter, I'm Glenn Oswald, the Z95.5.
Ready, now, 1, 2, 3.
Let's kick off another hour with the best variety of music. This is the new one from Richard Marx.
Satisfied.
Z95.5, Kim's next.
You're here in WCZY-FM Detroit. I'm Kim Carson. It's 6 o'clock.
All hits, Z95.5. There's Z95.5, live and local, sounding very hot in the spring of 1989. Remember, if you'd like to profile your hometown radio or an exceptional or different radio station in your market, send your tapes or CDs to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. The DX Audio Service membership would love to hear from you. Right now, however, we would love to hear the musings from the members.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Give us your thoughts about what's happening in your area.
Hi, this is John in Elmira Heights. I want to thank Fred and the whole crew for putting together this last series of musing of DX Audio Service. I really enjoyed the Mark Durenberger's speech there from the convention center in Nebraska. But also, what do we know how big these tape cartridges for radio are? Because I never seen one, and I'm curious to know what size tape they used and if it was a like reel-to-reel tape or if it was like cassette tape.
This is Ernie Holt of New York City. Can I give a suggestion about the fact of when Mark Durenberger does band scans or whatever he calls for the history of radio, when might he try doing something for his own hometown of the Twin Cities? That might sound interesting. I hope he gets a chance to do it.
I was listening to the DX Audio of January 2012 about the indecency rule. I guess it's nice to have clean television. I guess the problem you're going to always have is those that are going to scream free speech or what did we do that was incorrect, because, as I say, this is not Ozzy and Harriet TV anymore, or everybody wants to see Jerry Springer shows. Well, I like the clean TV, but as I say, I don't know how much I have any idea of the choice of what I want to see.
This is Tim Hendel with my opinion on Fred's question about obscenity and nudity on the air. There should be no government regulation of any kind regarding profanity, nudity, etc. We got rid of the fairness doctrine, and that allows all kinds of outrageous talk shows to be on, whether the information they convey is accurate or not. We should get rid of all regulations, no government censorship of profanity and so-called obscenity. Let the stations do whatever they want to. If people like this kind of programming, they'll watch it, they'll listen to it. If people object to this kind of programming, they'll simply turn the programs off, the ratings will fall, and those programs will probably go away.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. A week ago Wednesday, which would have been about the 18th of January, I picked up a station in Sheboygan, Wisconsin on 940. I think it was WZNF, their Catholic station. This was between 9:30 and 10, and I did catch their ID at 10 o'clock. The band's been staying open a lot lately. I've been able to pick up a lot of the sky wavers until 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And WBZ Boston has been coming up much earlier than what it takes to get dark lately. That's one distance station coming in very well. I'm sorry to hear, too, about Andy Musser. He was a great sports announcer in Philadelphia for 45 years. He did the Phillies games, among other things. It's been found out up here, too, that CJBC 860, a 50,000-watt station that's been there for a long time, has applied to go to FM 88.1. Now, if this was to happen and 860 got open, wow, think about that. What a battle there'd be for that frequency.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. Mike Dukin calling from Hayward, Wisconsin, with a couple of comments and a question. First, I'd like to say that I heard Fred's editorial on the January magazine, on the January audio service, and I would like to say, Fred and Mark, especially you guys, I don't think you'd have to, you don't have to worry about some of us, that includes me. I don't always participate in a lot of the NRC activities, meaning going to the conventions and things like that, but when it comes to the audio service, I look forward to reading it every month. And as long as there is a DX audio service, you will always have me, and I ain't never going to leave, to use some uneducated terms there, because I think I'll enjoy the audio service as long as there is. Secondly, I would like to tell you about an article about a new radio station that probably came on the air at the end of November, beginning of December. It's a new radio station resurrecting some old call letters. It's from Durand, Wisconsin, which, if my memory of directions serves me correctly, it's east of Eau Claire. The call letters are WRDN, and they're on 1430. They've been on the air online to do high school sports, but there's a nice article in the November 28th Eau Claire Leader Telegram. Now, I don't know if there is going to be some subscription fees for this, but I think it's an article that's worth reading on the magazine. And thirdly, my question, has anybody heard what sounds like a pirate? I picked it up towards the middle to the end of December. It's called the Big Q on 1710 kilohertz. They were playing 60s and 70s oldies and making some references to GE Super Radio and the Sea Crane radios. The signal wasn't very good, and it sounded like a pirate to me. Has anybody heard them? The Big Q. All right, that's it. 73s and good DX.
Hi, this is Matthew Ellis in Springfield, Missouri, trying to locate or identify a particular AM station. I can't seem to find out anything. It's very fady here, but it's at 1140. It's in Spanish, and I believe it's mentioning Monterey, 10:18 p.m. Central on January 13th, about this Spanish station I can't identify. Currently what's on right now is some kind of, I think, religious programming, from what it sounds like to me, so kind of the few words I can catch out of it. Now, this is Matthew Ellis again. I did manage to find the station in Spanish I was looking for on Wikipedia. It is apparently XEMR out of Monterey. I guess it's a sports station of some sort. I'll have to hear about that, because I swear back in like 2003 or so, I was playing music, different types of music, and must have changed formats since I last found them. So I guess I don't need any help there, but other people might want to know what that is if they've ever perhaps come across it and they couldn't identify it either. 73 and video.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. I had a call from Victor Schmidt in Silver Springs, Maryland today. Very glad to hear from him, as always. And he has informed me that there's a station on 700 in Maryland, WDMV, that's not going off when they're supposed to. And he's been interfering with WLW up there. And he's called WLW in Cincinnati about it. And there's another fellow in Pittsburgh, I think, is going to write a letter to the FCC about it. The band has been staying open. I picked up yesterday morning, Saturday, February the 18th, WIBA on 1310 Madison, Wisconsin. That's the first time I've had them in a long time. I got Sheboygan again on 940, and of course, some of the big ones have been staying up, like in Fort Wayne and Chicago and Louisville and the like. So it's just great, and I want to add my comment in answer to something that was discussed on the last tape that I just got a few days ago. I am so much against indecency in broadcasting. There was an outfit in 1975 got together called Remove Indecent Broadcasting, and I participated in that. I am definitely on that bandwagon. This afternoon, Sunday, the 19th of February, I received on 1370 a station in Cory, Pennsylvania, and that's very remarkable because that's right beside 1380, which is our local CKPC here in Brantford on 1380.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you have something to say, something to muse, give us a call today on the musings line, 419-741-0205, 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service members only. By the way, next month is our anniversary, so you might want to give us a call. Some of you folks that haven't been on in quite a time, or maybe somebody who hasn't even called at all, just call and say hi. How about that? Now, let's talk about carts. You know, there's still some stations using carts today, which is really a testament to the format and the durability of the machine in an age when we tend to throw stuff out after about 2 years when it breaks. But some cart machines are still kicking around. I think Phil Wayne's got some, and I even have some. Well, the carts actually started out as audio tape players, as four-track machines for the automobile market. And then they later evolved to, yep, you guessed it, the 8-track. And I'm sorry to say I had one of those, my Chevy Vega hatchback in 1972. Now, several manufacturers adapted them for use in broadcasts so they could play commercials, jingles, and station IDs and music. The neat thing about a cart, you put it in the machine, and then all you had to do is press the play button, and the audio immediately started. There was no queuing. The original cart was developed in 1954 by a guy by the name of George Esch. However, the invention of the Fidelipak cartridge, which was used in broadcast, has been credited to a guy by the name of Vern Nolte of Automatic Tape Company. And it was first commercially introduced in 1959 by Collins Radio at the 1959 NAB convention. Now, Fidelipak and Audiopak were the two biggest names in carts back in the 1960s. Companies like Gates, Collins, and a few others made the machines. But Fidelipak and Audiopak more or less set the broadcast standard, which, well, lasted till now. As more and more stations began broadcasting in stereo, the manufacturers then modified the machines and the cartridges to reduce stereo tape phase errors. Now, Fidelipak was originally a quarter-inch wide piece of tape, lubricated, and put into a loop in a cartridge. It was a two-track format. One of the tracks was used for the monaural audio program, and then the other was a cue track to control the player. when you recorded a cartridge, you'd hit the start button, and on the cue track, it would lay down a 1,000 hertz tone. Now, when the tape came around to that same spot, the machine would hear that tone and stop. That's how they got them so they would start right on cue. The machines also had a secondary cue of 150 hertz, and that was typically used as the function to fire the next cartridge. So if you had a stack of machines, you could have one machine trip the next, and then the next, and then the next. And of course, if you were working in automation, that's how your automation system worked. And there was also a tertiary tone, which was 8,000 hertz. Some stations used them for alerting the jock that the end of the commercial was coming up. And in automation, we used the 8 kilohertz tone for telemetry, so we could keep a log of what was being played on the air. Now, unlike the consumer-marketed 8-track cartridge, which was developed in 1964 by Bill Lear, which had the pinch roller inside the cartridge, the Fidelipak cartridge had a hole in the bottom right-hand front corner of the cartridge. And this is where the pinch roller, which was built into the player, would swing up and support the tape up against the capstan and pull it through the tape head assembly. Now, while Collins and Gates machines had the pinch roller automatically swing up into place when you put the cartridge in, there was companies like Spotmaster and ATC where the operator had to put the cartridge in and then pull a little lever back to lock it into place. And there were three sizes of Fidelipak carts. The 4-inch wide, what they called A size, that's the Fidelipak Model 300 and 350 and MasterCart, which was about the size of a standard 8-track cartridge, but you could only put 10.5 minutes of audio on it at a time at 7.5 IPS. Then they had the 6-inch wide B-side, which is the Fidelipak Model 600. Now, this larger cart was used to hold longer programs, such as newscasts and, well, even sometimes time announce. And then there was the 8-inch wide C-size Fidelipak Model 1200, which was used for background music and, I'm sorry to say, time announce. The reason I say time announce and sorry to say is because when you would record those, you had to be very careful if you were putting multiple cuts on a cartridge. Because if you got to, say, the 30th take and you messed up, you had to start all over from the beginning. Tape cartridges are kind of fun. I have to say that is the art of working behind the board, was the ability to slap in a tape cartridge and hit it right on cue and start it. Oh boy, these new disc jockeys don't know what they're missing.
This is the DX Audio Service.
Who listens to radio? Well, apparently a lot of people do. Remember this?
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people.
Arbitron has released a new report named Radio Delivers, Winner of 2012. In it, the ratings company touts both sales and listenership data that is sure to have general managers, general sales managers, and program directors smiling. Now let's look at some of the highlights of this report. First, 241 million American adults listen to radio each week. Each week across America, radio is heard by 94% of adults 18 to 34. Radio is heard by 95% of the adults 18 to 49. Radio is heard by 95% of the adults age 25 to 54. And radio is heard by 95% of the adults 35 to 64. Each week, radio reaches 95% of all Hispanics and 93% of all African Americans. Americans listen to radio for more than 14.6 billion hours each month. You can reach 90% of all Americans on the radio between 6 a.m. and 7 p.m. during the work week. 70% of all Americans tune in to radio each day for nearly 2.5 hours. Every week, radio reaches 91% of people who vote. New research shows radio delivers more than 93% of its lead-in audience during commercial breaks. The conclusion by Arbitron? Radio continues to be vital to millions, which is why its audience during programming and commercial breaks has remained consistently high month after month, quarter after quarter, and year after year. You can find out more about this survey at www.arbitron.com/radio today.
Legal battle between WINS and WEMP brews over right to use the slogan 22 minutes in promos. This article appeared in the New York Daily News entertainment section and was authored by David Hinckley. CBS Radio is threatening legal action if all news entrant WEMP, FM News 101.9, doesn't stop hitching itself to the "Give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world" slogan, which has long defined CBS's WINS 1010. CBS lawyers sent a two-page letter Tuesday to Merlin Media, owner of WEMP, demanding that 101.9 cease and desist from use of any CBS trademarks, which also includes traffic and weather together. WEMP for several weeks has run promotions in which a voice says, "It doesn't have 22 minutes, so then WEMP promises, give us 10 minutes, we'll give you the world." These slogans intentionally are confusingly similar to the WINS slogan, CBS attorney Robert Pancino wrote to Merlin. Such uses are unlawful and constitute trademark infringement. Merlin had been given a deadline, and at that deadline, WEMP Vice President of Programming Liz Aiello said Merlin was discussing its response. On air, 101.9 appeared to have stopped using the WINS-like line, instead promoting 10 minutes of nonstop news. Whether 101.9 stops the promos or not, editor Tom Taylor of trade publication RadioInfo.com said it's not a loss for Merlin. "They're an underdog coming after a well-established news operation," he says. "It's a win for them if they can just say, ha-ha, got you to look." CBS had no comment beyond the letter, but there was a sense of mild exasperation. Merlin's reference to the win's slogan, in CBS's words, has no discernible purpose other than to garner free publicity from the trade press. Tom Taylor agrees. "It's a classic radio game," he said. "Top 40 stations did this 50 years ago." But he also suggested any payoff is long-term, because building an all-news station is a marathon, not a sprint. You don't change listener habits overnight. When WEMP signed on last summer, it had a lifestyle focus aimed at women. It had no sports. With original programmer Walter Sabo now gone, it already has a tighter presentation, and the New York Giants are prominent. In the December Arbitron ratings, 101.9 averaged 0.6% of the city radio audience, putting it well below other major stations. At some point during the average week, 621,000 people tuned in. Wins averaged 3.4% of the audience, with 2,318,000 people tuning in at some point in the average week. And that was Legal Battle Between WINS and WEMP Brews Over Right to Use 22 Minutes in Promos, written by David Hinckley and appearing in the New York Daily News. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Radios are so much a part of the driving experience. It seems like cars have always had them. But at one time, they didn't. And here's the story on how they came to be. One evening in 1929, two young men named William Lear and Elmer Wavering drove their girlfriends to Lookout Point, high above the Mississippi River, in the town of Quincy, Illinois, to watch the sunset. It was a romantic night, to be sure. And one of the women observed that it'd be even nicer if they could listen to music in the car. Well, Lear and Waverling liked the idea. Both men had tinkered with radios. Lear had served as a radio operator in the United States Navy during World War I, and it wasn't long before they were taking apart a home radio and trying to get it to work in a car. But it wasn't as easy as it sounds. Automobiles have ignition switches, generators, spark plugs, and other electrical equipment that generates noisy static interference, making it nearly impossible to listen to radio while the engine is running. One by one, Lear and Waverling identified and eliminated such sources of electrical interference. When they finally got their radio to work, they took it to a radio convention in Chicago, Illinois. There they met Paul Galvin, owner of Galvin Manufacturing Corporation. He made a product called a battery eliminator, a device that allowed battery-powered radios to run on household AC current. But as more homes were wired for electricity, more radio manufacturers made AC-powered radios. Galvin needed a new product to manufacture. When he met Lear and Waverling at the radio convention, he found it. He believed that a mass-produced, affordable car radio had the potential to become a huge business. Lear and Waverling set up shop in Galvin's factory, and when they perfected their first radio, they installed it in his Studebaker. Then Galvin went to a local banker to apply for a loan. Thinking it might sweeten the deal, he had his men install a radio in the banker's Packard. Good idea, but it didn't work. A half hour into the installation, the banker's Packard caught fire. Guess what? They didn't get the loan. Galvin didn't give up. He drove his Studebaker nearly 800 miles to Atlantic City to show off the radio at the 1930 Radio Manufacturers Association convention. Too broke to afford a booth, he parked his car outside the convention hall and cranked up the radio so that passing conventioners could hear it. That idea worked. He got enough orders to put the radio into production. That first production model was called the 5T71. Galvin decided he needed to come up with something a little catchier. In those days, many companies in the phonograph and radio business used the suffix "ola" for their radio names. Radiola, Columbiola, and Victrola were the three of the biggest. Galvin decided to do the same thing, and since his radio was intended for a motor vehicle, he decided to call it Motorola. But even with the name change, the radio still had problems. When Motorola went on sale in 1930, it costed about $110 uninstalled. At the time, when you can buy a brand new car for $650, and the country was sliding into the Great Depression. By that measure, a radio for a new car would cost about $3,000 today. In 1930, it took two men several days to put the car radio in. The dashboard had to be taken apart so that the receiver and a single speaker could be installed, and the ceiling had to be cut open to install an antenna. These early radios ran on their own batteries, not on the car battery, so holes had to be cut in the floorboard to accommodate them. The installation manual had 8 complete diagrams and 28 pages of instructions. Selling a complicated car radio that cost 20% of the price of a brand new car wouldn't have been easy in the best of times, let alone the Great Depression. Galvin lost money in 1930 and struggled for a couple of years after that. But things picked up in 1933 when Ford began offering Motorola's pre-installed package at the factory. In 1934, they got another boost when Galvin struck a deal with B.F. Goodrich Tire Company to sell and install them in its chain of tire stores. By then, the price of the radio, installation included, had dropped to $55.
The Motorola car radio was off and running. The name of the company would be officially changed from Galvin Manufacturing to Motorola in 1947. In the meantime, Galvin continued to develop new uses for car radios. In 1936, the same year that it introduced the push-button tuning, it also introduced the Motorola Police Cruiser, a standard car radio that was factory preset to a single frequency to pick up police broadcasts. In 1940, he developed the first handheld two-way radio, the Handy Talkie, for the United States Army. A lot of communication technologies we take for granted today were born in the Motorola labs in the years that followed World War II. In 1947, they came out with the first television to sell under $200. In 1956, the company introduced the world's first pager. In 1969, it supplied the radio and television equipment that was used to televise Neil Armstrong's first steps on the moon. In 1973, it invented the first handheld cellular phone. Today, Motorola is one of the second largest cell phone manufacturers in the world. And it all started with the car radio. Whatever happened to the two men? The two men who installed the first radio in Paul Galvin's car, Elmer Wavering and William Lear, ended up taking very different paths in life. Wavering stayed with Motorola. In the 1950s, he helped change the automotive experience once again and developed the first automotive alternator, replacing inefficient and unreliable generators. The invention led to such luxuries as power windows, power seats, and eventually air conditioning. Lear also continued inventing. He holds more than 150 patents. Remember the 8-track tape players we were talking about a moment ago? Lear invented that. But what he's really famous for are his contributions to the field of aviation. He invented radio direction finders for planes, aiding the invention of the autopilot, designing the first fully automatic aircraft landing system. And in 1963, he introduced his most famous invention of all, the Learjet, the world's first mass-produced, affordable business jet. Not bad for a guy who dropped out of school after the eighth grade. It's time now for a book review, and this one is for our friends who are on the northwest side of the United States, up in Washington and Oregon and Idaho. It's called The Crazy Days of Radio. Earl Riley, the madman of Northwest radio and television, has written a lighthearted account of his colorful life and career. According to Earl, Untold Humorous Stories and Bloopers from Early Radio and TV is a book that takes you through 60 years of behind-the-scenes stories of local radio and early television history, and includes such names probably familiar to folks in the Northwest, such as Stan Borison, Dorothy Bulett, and Wally Nelskog. In an early chapter, Riley tells of being forced to host a country music segment during his Pop Tunes radio show. So he adopted an alter ego, Spike Hogan, who spoke with a screechy, falsetto voice, twangy, and was known for his goofy stunts. Little did Riley know, but Spike became such a hit that the show lasted for many, many years, and Spike made many special appearances at events throughout the region. Riley continued to play stunts and pranks throughout his career and lifetime. Always the joker, his tradition with Christmas cards tells a story conceived not in reverence for the proper meaning of Christmas, but as a response to today's secular cards. About 50 years ago, when his friends started saying, "We're not sending cards this year," Riley sent out plain, empty envelopes marked on the outside, "We're not sending out cards this year." The next year, he sent postage due plain cards with a stamp inside. And so the tradition began. Riley Self-Published Memoirs, is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or can be ordered through your favorite bookstore. This article recently appeared in the Northwest Prime News, the Puget Sound region's monthly publication celebrating life after 50. For more information, visit www.northwestprimetime.com. Jumping back to a comment on the Musings to the Members line, Mike Dukin commented about hearing a pirate on 1710 kilohertz calling itself the Big Q. As far as I can tell, this radio station started to show up at the beginning of January 2010, and it's been on sporadically ever since. Here's a clip from last Christmas when the Big Q was on the air. According to another DXer, he was cruising the medium wave band early in the morning and came across this new pirate on 1710 instead of the usual Boston pirate. He was hearing a strong signal from the station playing oldies music, Beach Boys, The Temptations, The Big Bopper, etc., and he listened for over an hour and heard frequent announcements between songs. The station called itself the Big Q. And it had very slick-sounding liners and sounded very professional. The most unusual part of the broadcast were several slightly different ads for the classic GE Super Radio. The announcer was encouraging listeners to go to eBay.com and search out and purchase a GE Super Radio to benefit their listening hobby. Quote, "No expensive receivers or long wires needed. Just get a Super Radio and get it on eBay." Here's a clip of the Super Radio ad. Well, if anyone knows where this pirate is at, why not let us know? Give us a call on the Musings line. Well, that's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. We'll see you next month when it's our birthday again, or I guess our anniversary. 73, good DX, and get out and support radio.